Please be advised, this episode may include depictions of murder, sexual content, and foul language that is not suitable for children. Parental discretion is advised. Hi, welcome back to Wickedness. I'm Lenny.
And I'm Matt.
Thanks for joining us again.
Heck yeah. Thanks for joining us for another stupendous podcast.
Every week we do the best podcast around, just nobody knows about it.
That's right. We're a mystery, except for you.
Yeah, we do have a few faithful listeners.
That's right, because you're true.
Lenny and Matt fans.
True crime professionals at heart.
Yeah, we have no words.
I like it, though.
We've had another crazy week.
Yeah, good momentous week. It was great.
Was it?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was uneventful.
Maybe a little bit, but hey, I don't have to tell them that. It's like Facebook. You know, you just put out the good stuff, not all the bad. People think you live this enriched, amazing life.
No, we don't. We live a normal life where shit hits the fan sometimes, and then other times it's decent. And then other times it's that it rode in between, like this past week was. There was nothing good or bad about it. It was just a week.
True. Yeah.
Which nothing. I can't complain about. I'm good with that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, sometimes
mundane life is good.
Is good. Especially the older you get, you love it.
Yes. I like peace, quiet.
Serenity.
Normalcy.
Serenity. You like that's big words. I've been reading a lot more, so I'm trying to use these. These bigger words come out because I'm getting SMRT, a lot smarter.
You're dork.
My wife had these, The Simpsons.
I didn't. The kids got them for
me. Oh, yeah. They got
for Father's Day.
Yeah, these pajama pants that said, I'm SMRT,
smart. It had Homer Simpson on them.
Yeah.
I am SMRT, smart.
I finally had to get rid of those things.
Oh.
I know. It was a sad day. We had a funeral.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, it was the whole passing of the torch.
I thought you were going to tell
my new jammies on.
I thought you were going to talk about my distasteful joke right before we.
Oh yeah, I recording. Said, well, I'm pretty smart. SMRT. Since we're on that subject, and I said it says Jeffrey, the episode 89, by the way, Jeffrey Dahmer part one. I said, oh, we're going to have multi parts. She said, yeah, just like Jeffrey Dahmer cut up.
Yeah,
all his victims into parts. I was like, oh, that is distasteful joke.
It's horrible. Joking.
We're going to have way less listeners now. We just have a good, you know, handful of you wicked listeners.
Whatever. Look, that new Netflix series, the Jeffrey Dahmer thing, that's everyone's been watching it and talking about it and stuff like that. They did a really good job with it. And Evan, what's his name? The actor who played Dahmer, freaking amazing.
Yeah, he did good.
Like, he really did a good job. But of course, because of that, it's been stuck in my head. And here I was thinking we had already covered Jeffrey Dahmer in one of our previous our previous podcasts. We haven't.
Yeah, and if you probably had watched the Netflix series, we're just going to give you more Dahmer overload.
Yeah, why not? Why not strike while the iron is hot?
It's pretty good.
Oh gosh, I could or the pan.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Ooh.
Sorry.
I'm just what was it? It was bad meat. It was bad meat.
Yeah. I like to eat meat and my parents sent me some and it went bad.
It always went bad. It had gone bad.
I was just like, who is buying that crap? But people did.
For a while. I mean, it's terrible. Not a bad excuse, I guess.
Yeah, well, no. And the thing here is, if it's not gone though within like a day or two because he got rid of it and cleaned stuff out, then there's a problem.
Right.
You either live nasty and someone needs to go in there and like clean your place for you, or you're lying, and that's not what's causing the smell.
Well, and I know we'll get into it, but that good Samaritan neighbor that was not putting up with that crap. Like, she knew something was up the whole time. Called the police so many times. I mean, that's pathetic and sad.
Right. Again, we talk about, like, without meaning to, we kind of hit on the social injustice of the time.
Yes.
Because honestly, I think if that crap happened today, it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't go down the same way. Mm. I don't think.
Yeah.
Things have changed. I know people are always like, it hasn't changed that much. I think it's changed quite a bit.
I think it's changed, or I live in a facade and would like to think it has, for sure.
I would like to think that we have less racist people out there than we used to.
Yes.
And
but I know there's parts of the country and areas. I mean, we live in Oklahoma where you would think that, and it has been a problem, and it continues to be a problem in places, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's wild when you hear of certain places that still have, I mean, just problems, and you're just like, man, that is just...
like real racism problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's odd.
I don't think it's odd. I think it's a lack of education, to be honest with you. And people just like we're ingrained with our environment. We were kind of talking about this the other day, remember? Like, honestly, I'm glad that we, as we're growing up, we can learn to think for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we learn to think for ourselves.
Yeah.
Because if I tell you right now, if I was really a product of my raising, I would be the biggest racist you've ever met.
Yeah, and we were talking about our granddaughters on the way to drop them off at their house when we pick them up in the evening some to help the mom out because she's working a little bit late. But we'll roll the windows down for them, and they're just like, hi, hello.
Just say hi to everybody.
And it just shows the innocence that they're saying hello to anybody, whoever it is. It doesn't matter what color, what race, what creed.
What they look like at all. Woman,
yeah.
Kid.
They're just saying hello, hi.
Waving at everybody, smiling at everybody.
It is, of course, as cute as can be and as sweet as can be, but it shows you that innocence and how things that happen in their life and then things that they're taught a certain way can gear them or push people to be a certain way.
Yeah, because I think we're a product of our environment. I think we're a product, like, we start to believe the way that we start to believe because of things that either happen to us, directly to us, or to someone that we're very close to, or our parents.
Yes.
And grandparents and stuff influence us so much. Like,
I think
if that's why I say, if I was actually a product of my environment, I would probably be the biggest racist in the world, but luckily I am not.
Right.
And I correct my family members who are that way all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And stand up for the fact that we're all human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm getting on a little tangent here.
Real quick, before we kind of delve into this too, I think about, you know, genetics too play a part for sure.
Mm-hmm.
However, those genetics and those things could be there. However,
I don't want to call it genetics, well, babe. That means it's ingrained in your blood. It's not genetics.
But if you're taught, it's just going to infuriate those things. Let's say alcoholism, that people have alcoholism, they say, too. So if your parents are alcoholics, their parents are alcoholics, you may be more susceptible to alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
But if they had stopped drinking, let's say, and you were never really around that, and you didn't pick it up or weren't influenced, I would say there's that good possibility that you're never going to become an alcoholic yourself.
We could debate this because I think you're wrong. I mean, I could come up with cases in our own family to show you that. But
sure. I'm just, you know, there is the thought of...
But that is genetic. I think that is genetic. Mm-hmm. You have a gene in you that makes you more susceptible to becoming an alcoholic. I think alcoholism is a disease that we choose. Like, we can combat or whatever with our mental, our brain.
Mm-hmm.
But I the way that we think and stuff is influenced by our experiences and our environment. Mm-hmm. Not
I agree with
a
that.
Genetic thing. It's not in a gene. Mm-hmm. Because again, look at me. And I'm not, I hate to bash my own family.
Yeah.
But we don't believe the same way. That's for damn sure as far as races go.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's move on. People are probably like, I'm turning them off. I already turned them off. So let's start this. We're going to talk about some Jeffrey Dahmer today. He was born May 21st, 1960 to his mom, Joyce Flint Dahmer. I like her name, Joyce Flint.
Joyce Flint.
Wait, what was that? Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. What was his name?
I don't know. I don't know this stuff.
Oh my god!
You know I'm horrible with that.
Yeah. Anyway, Flint Rider or something like, or maybe that was Rapunzel. I don't know. Anyway, so then his mom was Joyce. His dad was Lionel. He was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He's the oldest of two kids. His mom worked as a teletype machine instructor, and his dad was a chemist. His dad was gone a lot, traveling for work, attending seminars, that kind of stuff. It was said that Jeffrey was neglected as a child. He was left on his own a lot. He was only six when his brother David was born, and after that, it was said he was even more neglected than before. Some say that his neglect actually wasn't true, that he was like doted on by his parents when he was young, and that he actually distanced himself from them due to his parents' constant fighting and arguing with each other, which is also, you know, I guess something that could have been true. No one knows really which one is true because Jeffrey Dahmer himself said mm-hmm. both.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, they were great parents at times, and then no,
well, they
neglected me.
Like, I could see that both. I mean, that mm-hmm. he felt like, okay, there was some good parenting and some good times, but then there was the bad too.
Right. Well, it was also said that his mom had a lot of mental illnesses. And by the time Jeffrey was in first grade, his mom was so depressed, she stayed in bed a lot and didn't really do anything.
Mm-hmm.
She also was an attention hog. So like when his dad was home, she tried to monopolize all of his time, which took away time from Jeffrey and his brother, which I have a hard time with that because as a mom, don't you want your kids to have their dad and their like yeah. spending time with them and stuff?
Yeah.
But apparently she was not like that. She was very me,
mm-hmm.
and forget about them. At one point, she attempted suicide by overdose on pills that she happened to be addicted to. It was also assumed that she'd been on medications all during her pregnancy with Jeffrey. And the whole time, Lionel's just not home. He's just hardly ever around.
Mm-hmm. Very.
Yeah, just working. Like, he's working.
Mm-hmm.
Even with his family life, Jeffrey was described as being an energetic and happy kid all the way up until he had a double hernia surgery when he was three. And after this surgery, people noticed that he was very subdued and quiet. His peers and teachers in elementary school remember him being quiet and timid and not having a lot of friends. His first grade teacher even made a note on his report card saying that she thought he might feel neglected and she thought it might be coming from his mom's illnesses. Like, she straight up made a note on his report card.
Wow. Well,
you know, mom and dad are going to read this.
Yeah. So like, let me make a note here.
That I think your mental illness is affecting your child.
Well, and I think in the Netflix series, they do a pretty good job with that, with the way he acts. Just some odd.
Well, even though he was still quiet, he was a quiet kid, he did still have a few friends in elementary school. He just didn't have a lot of mm-hmm. friends. He wasn't total loner status he wasn't super sketchy, I guess. Just not an extrovert. It's just not out there. Hey, we want to be my friend.
Yeah.
He probably was the kid that someone else approached and said, hey, want to be friends?
Right.
So anyway, when Jeffrey was young, he started to get interested in dead animals. And I don't want to compare the Netflix series to this story. I just want to make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was accurate on some points, but not all. And this is one of the points.
Okay.
So Jeffrey's dad didn't introduce him to the dead animal thing mm-hmm. like they show in Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
He took up this interest on his own. He started off with insects like dragonflies and butterflies, and he would keep them inside jars. He eventually started collecting roadkill on his own. Sometimes his friends were with him, and he would take these animals and dismember them, either at home or outside near his home. One of his friends said that Jeffrey would keep parts of the dismembered animals in jars in his family's wooded tool shed, and he would explain that he was doing this because he was interested in how each animal, quote, fitted together, end quote. Like, he was doing all this by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And one time he even cut a dead dog's head off before he took the body of the animal and nailed it to a tree.
Wow.
Then he impaled the skull of the dog on a wooden stake in the woods behind his house. He was kind of hiding this stuff from his family. It wasn't just, it wasn't like dad and him were out scooping up roadkill and dissecting in a garage. He wasn't just dissecting them out of curiosity. He was starting to treat these dead animals like they were experiments of some kind. It's believed that he started becoming interested in dead animals when he saw his dad remove some animal bones from underneath the home, which was in the Netflix series. That was accurate. But Lionel said that Jeffrey was, quote, oddly thrilled by the sound that the bones made, and he developed a fixation on playing with and collecting animal bones from then. So before the roadkill and the dissecting and stuff, it was all about the bones. So he was looking for bones everywhere. He would even sometimes search under and around the house for bones. And if he found a live animal, he wouldn't kill it, but he would press around on it and study it for the bone placement. It was all about bones.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't start with hearts and guts and stuff. It started with bones.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So when he was 6 years old, his family moved to Doylestown, Ohio. And this was when Joyce was pregnant with Jeffrey's younger brother, David, who he was allowed to name. His parents actually let Jeffrey name his little brother, which I find interesting.
That is.
And a couple years later, they moved to Bath, Ohio. And 2 years after that, Jeffrey's curiosity made it to the dinner table. They were having dinner, eating chicken, and Jeffrey asked his dad what would happen to the bones if he put them into a bleach solution. This is where his dad gets involved. So,
with the chemistry side of
things. Yes. Yep, because he's a chemist. So Lionel, he's already concerned about Jeffrey, but because Jeffrey's, you know, he's still got this blah personality, right?
Mm-hmm.
He just doesn't get excited about very much. He asks a bunch of strange questions, has all these weird habits. But when he starts showing interest in this, he actually started getting excited. So his dad was like even more excited because Jeffrey's showing an interest in something scientific. He's a scientist. So he's thinking, this is a way for me to finally bond with my son and get Jeffrey to kind of come out of his shell. So he shows him how to safely bleach and preserve animal bones that he finds and collect that he's found and he's collected.
Okay.
So Jeffrey used this knowledge of cleaning and preserving the bones on most of his collection, like after his dad showed him. So that's where his dad's involvement was, not in the dissecting, but in bleaching the bones.
Okay.
So this went on the same way throughout middle school and into high school. And in both middle and high school, he was seen as an outcast. In like elementary school, he only had like a handful of friends, right? Many of Jeffrey's former classmates remembered him drinking both beer and hard liquor that he would smuggle into school inside the lining of his army fatigue jacket. And then he would also hide it in his locker. So this kid started drinking early on in his life. Yeah. He was known to have started drinking before school would start, and he would drink throughout the day. And this all started when he was only 14 years old. Could you imagine?
Yeah. I wonder, did he see his dad doing this, or was it, it was just around the fridge. So he's like, let me pop the top here and try this out.
It never
talks about it.
No. So one classmate remembered seeing Jeffrey drinking gin in class, and he asked him why he was drinking, and Jeffrey told him it was his medicine. Could you imagine?
Oh, wow.
It's my medicine. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh about this, but it is kind of funny. However, his teachers and the staff at his school remembered him being a polite and intelligent kid. He only got average grades in school, but the staff believed it was because of his quietness and how withdrawn he was. He was also known to be a good tennis player, and he also briefly played in the high school band, which I had no idea.
Yeah.
So when he reached puberty, Jeffrey realized he was gay because of how homosexuality at the time was looked at. He didn't come out to anyone. He kept his sexuality to himself. In his early teens, he did have a brief relationship with another young man, but they didn't have sex. They made out with each other. And during this same time, he started to have sexual fantasies about dominating and controlling a submissive male partner. And these fantasies started to become intertwined with dissection, which started directing his morbid curiosities to humans instead of keeping it with animals. So all the way up until now, all the way up until puberty, he's focused on animals.
Okay.
Puberty, his hormones go crazy and he starts focusing on humans, which is really sick. So at one point when he was about 16 years old, he thought up a rape fantasy where he would grab this male jogger that he had seen running by his home several times and he had, you know, formed an attraction to. In his fantasy, he would knock him unconscious and then have sexual intercourse with him. So he actually tried to make this fantasy a reality and he hid himself in the bushes on the route where he saw the jogger running on several times before. He brought a baseball bat and waited in the bushes, but the jogger didn't run by that day. Thank goodness. You know, I really believe that God was watching out for this guy because he didn't run by that day. And Jeffrey never tried to implement this plan again after he didn't.
He struck out. No
that
pun
day.
Intended.
Baseball bat. You suck.
Yeah. I had to. Sorry,
we both
folks.
Have bad jokes.
Yeah.
So this is why we're married. However, Jeffrey said this was the first time he had planned to try and tried to attract someone, which I think is true.
Mm-hmm.
He was seen as a loner and kind of an odd person in high school. He eventually became the class clown due to the pranks he regularly staged. Some that he did just to amuse his classmates. Others he did to just get some attention. The pranks became known as doing a Dahmer, and it included bleeding, simulating epileptic seizures or handicapped kids, and knocking them over at school and at local stores. Like, he would literally knock handicapped kids down.
Wow.
Just to get a few laughs. On top of that, his grades had dropped due to his alcohol abuse and his continuing apathy toward academic and social interactions. Like, he was just really not wanting to be in school.
Mm.
His parents tried to help him by hiring a private tutor for him, but the tutor had very little success with his kid. And there was a lot going on in his home as well at the time, with his parents going to counseling to try to save their failing marriage. And the counseling failed, and they ended up getting a divorce. At first, it was an amicable split. But then Jeffrey's mom and dad started fighting more frequently, even when split up. And in early 1978, Lionel moved out of the house. Jeffrey graduated from high school in May of 1978, shortly after his dad moved out. And a few weeks after his graduation, one of his teachers saw him sitting close to the school parking lot drinking several cans of beer, like right before graduation.
Wow.
Listen to this, though. The teacher threatened to report him, but Jeffrey told his teacher he was having a lot of problems at home and that the school's guidance counselor knew about the problems. So the teacher didn't report anything, and shortly after this, Joyce got custody of Jeffrey's brother, David, and she moved out of the family home, moved in with family members in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Just left, but the teacher didn't report his drinking.
Yeah, she's like, well,
he's
okay.
Like, oh, the counselor knows. Okay,
and you're
just carry
problems.
On.
Make, okay,
carry on. Keep drinking, buddy.
That's
keep
right.
drinking. That's how you solve your problems. Like, you know, like, I don't care if some student tells me, well, they, you know, the guidance counselor knows. They may know about your problems.
Yeah, he's graduating. He's out of here.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, right? Well, I think I would have tried to get him some help.
Mm-hmm.
You're not even 18, or maybe you are 18, but still you're drinking beer out right outside of school and you're saying, well, I have a lot of problems. That's not going to fix it.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, so when his mom moved out, he had just turned 18. He's obviously legally an adult, and he wasn't considered in the court's custodial considerations, but he was abandoned by his mom. Like, she did not even consider taking him, just loaded up his little brother.
Mm.
And took off. I don't care how old your kids are. You can't just leave them like she did.
Well,
it just.
I agree.
But she did.
Mm-hmm.
She just drove off. That part was true in the Netflix series. Like, she just left. So he's home alone in their family home. Like, his dad has no clue his mom has left him. Like, and that Jeffrey is living on his own.
Yeah.
Just want to note that. Lionel had no idea. He's still living in a hotel somewhere down whatever. And against Lionel is, why aren't you contacting your kids more often?
Yep.
Like, seriously, why aren't you more, like, you don't have to talk to your ex-wife, but you got two boys.
Definitely
why aren't you checking
both
on them?
Both of them not involved in
right
Jeffrey's life.
Exactly.
Sure.
Like, this just really does kind of show you the neglect. If you really want to go back to what I was saying before, no one knows for sure which, but Jeffrey said both. Mm-hmm. I can see it.
Yeah.
So, even as a teenager, I can see it. So, anyway, this abandonment left Jeffrey living in this home on his own right after he graduated from high school. No job, no one to turn to, nothing. On June 18th, Jeffrey was out driving around and saw a hitchhiker. He had been alone for several weeks and he was looking for some company. So he picked up this hitchhiker named Stephen Hicks, who was only 4 days away from turning 19. Jeffrey had stopped and asked him if he wanted to come hang out with him at his house. He told him he had some beer and weed, come hang out, you know. So Stephen said yes and went home with Jeffrey to hang out. Stephen had been hitchhiking to a rock concert in Lockwood Corners, but took a detour when he agreed to go back with Jeffrey. They hung out for a few hours drinking and listening to music when Stephen wanted to leave, but Jeffrey didn't want him to. So Jeffrey grabbed a 10-pound dumbbell and beat him with it. Later, he told police that he only hit him twice from behind while Stephen sat in a chair. When Stephen was unconscious, Jeffrey strangled him to death with the bar of the dumbbell. Then he stripped Stephen's clothes off and he masturbated over his corpse.
Oh,
I know. So the next day, Jeffrey dissected the body in his basement, later burying the remains in a shallow grave in his backyard. And several weeks later, he dug up the remains and took the flesh off of the bones and then dissolved it in acid before he flushed the solution down the toilet.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. He then crushed the bones with a sledgehammer and scattered them in the woods behind his family home. And this was his first murder and where it all started.
Wow.
Yeah. So 6 weeks after this murder, Lionel Dahmer and his new fiance show up at Jeffrey's house and found Jeffrey living alone. So they moved into the house with Jeffrey, and that fall, Jeffrey enrolled in Ohio State University, hoping to major in business. During his one term in OSU, he was so unproductive and lazy with his schoolwork from partying and drinking so much that he failed out. He passed only one course that term, which was riflery. He got a B minus in it.
Whoa.
Yeah, his overall GPA was 0.45 out of a 4.0.
Man.
Right? That's like, wow. Why even bother?
Yeah.
His dad had shown up unexpectedly to find Jeffrey's dorm room littered with liquor bottles and finding that his son wasn't doing well. But he went ahead and paid in advance for Jeffrey's second term. But Jeffrey ended up dropping out after 3 months.
Goodness.
Yeah. So I was just like, wow, dude. Your dad went ahead and paid for your second term knowing you weren't doing good. You know he didn't get that money back.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's not funny. Like, I'd be so pissed if that was my kid, but it is what it is. So his dad made him join the Army in 1979. He trained as a medical specialist at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas. He did well in basic and his tech school. I don't know what the Army called their tech school, but the Air Force, which I served in. That's where you go to learn your job before you get shipped off to your first duty station.
Mm-hmm. You got that right.
Right. You know, too, because you retired. Anyway. So I don't, what does the Army call their tech school?
I don't know.
Okay. So he did well. And on June 13th, 1979, he was sent to Baumholder, West Germany, where he served as a combat medic in the 2nd Battalion, 68th Armored Regiment, 8th Infantry Division. Goodness.
I know, it's a lot.
His Army records showed he was an average or slightly above average soldier. However, it came out later that two soldiers he was stationed with in Germany claimed that Jeffrey had assaulted them. One said that Jeffrey had drugged and raped him in an armored personnel carrier in 1979, and the other said that Jeffrey had repeatedly raped him over a 17-month period.
Jeez.
Right? I couldn't even imagine. And I'm sure that the attacks went unreported for many years because of the stigma of being sexually assaulted by another man.
Just being embarrassed.
Yeah.
For sure.
I can't even imagine. But due to Jeffrey's alcohol abuse, he was honorably discharged from the Army in March of 1981, being deemed unsuitable for service in the Army, but they didn't think this would translate negatively to his civilian life. And that's why he ended up with an honorable discharge.
Yeah, that's surprising.
Yeah, the army was like, it won't affect the civilian life, but you're not fit for the army anymore. Mm. You got to go, buddy.
Yeah.
So Jeffrey was debriefed at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, then given a plane ticket to travel anywhere in the country he wanted to, which I didn't know you could do that, but it had been a thing back in the day.
Yeah.
I want to fly to,
Well, your last, Timbuktu. Yeah, Miami, Florida. That's where I want to go. And then, okay, well, that's where you're going to end up because that's where we're sitting.
Yeah, but they
you.
Just
that's
gave it. Him an open ticket.
Yeah.
You can't do that anymore. Yeah. You can't have a ticket to anywhere.
I think I kind of remember some of that, not during our era, but they would do that, yes.
That's crazy. So, you know, they give him this ticket to travel anywhere, and he later tells police he didn't think he could face his father after being discharged, so he went to Miami Beach, Florida to try to live on his own and because he was tired of the cold weather. He worked at a deli and lived in a nearby hotel. He spent most of his money on alcohol, though, and he was soon evicted from the motel for non-payment. He then would sleep on the beach, you know, and then work, but that didn't last long, and he ended up calling his dad and asking if he could move home in September of 1981. He okay. was down there for a minute, yeah. but not that long. So when he moved back to Ohio, he lived with his dad and his stepmom, and he insisted that they give him chores to do until he could find a job. He continued drinking heavily, and after 2 weeks, he was arrested for drunken disorderly conduct. He was fined $60 and given a suspended 10-day jail sentence. Lionel tried to wean Jeffrey off of alcohol, but had no luck. So in December of 1981, they sent Jeffrey to live with his grandma in West Allis, Wisconsin. Jeffrey's grandma was the only family member that Jeffrey showed any affection toward. He, like, really loved her. Aww. So they hoped that her influence and a change of scenery might help him give up drinking, find a job, and turn his life around. At first, living with his grandma was good. He went to church with her. He did chores and helped her out around the house. He got a job and followed most of his grandma's house rules. He did continue to drink and smoke, though, which is breaking a couple of her house rules. That's why they say most. At first, this new influence was good for him. And in early 1982, he found a job as a phlebotomist in the Milwaukee Blood Plasma Center. He kept this job for 10 months, but was laid off. And after this, he didn't work for 2 years. And he lived on whatever money his grandma gave him. Shortly after losing his job, he was arrested for indecent exposure. It kind of all went downhill from here.
Okay.
On August 7th, 1982, he was at the Wisconsin State Fair Park, and someone saw him expose himself to a crowd of 25 women and children. Right? He was fined $50 plus court fees. Things were quiet for Jeffrey, living off his grandma, drinking, smoking, and just kind of existing. In January of 1985, he finally found another job as a mixer at the Milwaukee Ambrosia Chocolate Factory, where he worked the late night shift from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., 6 nights per week with Saturdays off. He had a strange incident happen when he was at the library one day, right after getting this job. He was just sitting and reading, minding his own business, when a guy throws him a note offering to give him a blowjob. This was just a random thing that happened. Jeffrey ignored this proposition, but this incident started making him think about things that had sort of gone dormant for him, and he started fantasizing about dominating and controlling other men again.
This
was a trigger for him.
Wow. That's interesting.
And that's why it's important to mention it, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
So this led him to start familiarizing himself with Milwaukee's local gay bars, bookstores, and gay bathhouses. He also stole a male mannequin from a store and kept it for a while to use for some kind of weird sexual stimulation. I guess I'm all for him playing out his sexual fantasies on a mannequin if it kept him from killing and raping.
Yeah, right.
But
only if.
That didn't happen, yeah. So his grandma found the mannequin hidden in a closet, and she demanded that he get rid of it. Like, she was adamant about this thing needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
But by late 1985, Jeffrey had started to go to the bathhouses, and later he described them as being relaxing places for him. But he didn't like the sexual encounters he was having. He didn't like how his partners would move during the sexual act. The sick thing is that he told police after his arrest that it was during this time that he had started training himself to see people as objects and not as people. So he's having these sexual encounters with people that he sees as a mannequin, maybe. They're not real to him.
Hmm.
So Because he's not satisfied with his sexual encounters and he didn't view people as people, he started bringing in sleeping pills that he would slip to his partners in 1986. He would drop the crushed drug into their liquor. Then when they passed out, he would rape them.
Okay.
However, the bathhouses started to catch on to what he was doing after 12 incidents.
Wow.
Yeah, one that almost resulted in the death of one of his victims. So his memberships were all revoked, and he just started renting hotel rooms to continue doing what he did. Side note on this, after his memberships were revoked, he read in the paper or saw in the news that an 18-year-old male had passed away and the family had his funeral. So Jeffrey actually tried to dig up the corpse with the intention of taking it home, but he said that the soil was too hard and he abandoned this plan. I'm personally glad that he wasn't able to follow through with this.
Right.
So then in August of 1986, Jeffrey was arrested for masturbating in front of two 12-year-old boys while he stood close by on the bank of the Kinnick River. At first, when he was arrested, he admitted to it and was charged with indecent exposure again. But then he changed his story and claimed he was urinating and didn't know anyone was there. And so the charge was changed to disorderly conduct on March 10th, 1987. And he was sentenced to 1 year of probation and instructions to go to counseling. This is where we're going to stop our Jeffrey Dahmer story in part one.
Yeah. This whole thing's interesting and stuff that you're bringing out that I didn't know and wasn't on this, you know, again, Netflix series. And I know they can only either dramatize certain things, they only can cover certain things. But these things are important as far as kind of leading up to what he did.
Right. And why he was the way he was and mm-hmm. things like that. Like, and I'm not saying Netflix did a great job. They did a great job, but it's TV, and they have to change some things for TV. Because mm-hmm. how boring is it that grandma's snooping around the house and finds something in the closet?
Yeah.
No, he left it in his bed because it's more dramatic effect, right?
Right.
Like, there are some, like, the story didn't change. It just didn't flow the way that Netflix had it flow.
Yeah. You definitely have to have more of that dramatic effect.
Well, to keep people's interest.
To keep people's interest. Makes sense. I understand.
But I can't lie. Here, so.
And that's good. That's a good podcast.
Not lie. I shouldn't say lie. I can't twist it for dramatic effect. This is really what happened.
Yeah. The truth has to be told.
Yep.
All right. So for now, tell us what you think, and you can contact us at wickednesstruecrime@yahoo.com. Check out our website at wickednesstruecrimeandtheunknown.com and follow us on Instagram at wickednesstruecrime. Check us out on Anchor at anchor.fm/wickedness, where you can also lend us your support by clicking on that support button. Last but not least, rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you get your podcast on. And this helps our podcast get out to more listeners, and it makes sure you don't miss another episode. We appreciate you listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.